Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
She was 6 feet of black dynamite. He was a short Hasidic Jew. She fought a savage battle to stay alive in the ghetto. He studied the Talmud at night. She burned the ghetto to the ground. He kindled the Sabbath candles. Theirs was a love of passion, a torrid sensual lust, fueled by those who said no. Samuel L. Bronkowitz presents Cleopatra Schwartz. They alone dared to triumph in a hellish inferno of unrelenting desire. Never before has the screen unleashed such violent fury. Never again will one man and one woman defy such incredible odds. Together, no one could stop them.
I forgot the fueled by those who said no. Way ahead of their time. Jim Abrams in studio. I loved every second of that that movie. And plus, lots of titties.
Yes. Well, there you go.
There you go.
If you ever took a look at our audience and divided it into quadrants, you would find young and male was about up at the top. And as it got older and more female, that audience wasn't as strong.
Was it? It must have been very satisfying or flattering to hear with the latest doc and then movie about
stupid and futile gesture.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. National Lampoon.
Yeah. Where he was saying, you know, after doing Caddyshack and then seeing Airplane, he thought, oh, that's the movie.
Yeah, that was
we
crazy.
Could never be that.
I mean, I remember when Doug died and hearing stuff about that, but that's amazing the way that movie portrayed it. I don't know if that's true or not.
I'll say it's true.
Yeah. All right.
I think it was in the doc as well for some reason. I think it was in both.
Yeah, I remember hearing it more twice. In the narrative film. Yeah.
So Airplane.
So meanwhile, so once we saw it, Dave and Jerry and I started to feel very guilty. I mean, are we responsible for Doug Kenny's death?
Oh, my God.
Well, not directly, but yeah, mostly.
Just blood on your hands.
Not 100%, maybe 70.
Your hands aren't soaked in blood because of splattering. Yeah,
okay.
Sure, yeah.
But it's funny. So when you watch, the genius of Airplane was, you guys don't remember the old airport movies.
No.
But Airport 77 and Airport 76 and the Concorde and all these, it was Towering Inferno,
right,
and Airport. And Earthquake and these kind of Irwin
Allen, right?
What's that?
Irwin Allen?
Yeah. No. Disaster Movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Irwin.
You got that right?
Yeah, Irwin Allen. Irwin Allen, right. And so the genius, I think, with Airplane is taking all the heavies from those movies, like George Kennedy was in those movies,
right,
those
so
airport
great
movies, and just putting him in the same outfit, in the same position, same thing, and then make gibberish come out of his mouth or jokes come out of his mouth. But don't get comedians. Mm-hmm. Get the same guys who are in all those movies and have them do this.
And play it straight.
Right.
And play it straight. Yeah, and that was really the biggest hurdle for Paramount to get over when they decided they'd finance Airplane was the whole casting notion. And they wanted Dom DeLuise for the Doctor and stuff
right
like that. And it really wasn't, but the movie was so cheap and there were involvements, they just let us start. And it really wasn't until after the first day's dailies when, and fortunately, the first day we filmed Leslie Nielsen saying, "Don't call me Shirley." And
right
then all of a sudden the phone rings and it's Jeffrey Katzenberg saying, "Oh, now we get it."
Yeah, they get it.
Now
right
we get it. Because if that had been a comedian with those kinds of lines, it wouldn't have been as much fun. Actually, the real inspiration for that casting was what we used to do. Dave and Jerry Zucker and I used to have this theater called Kentucky Fried Theater in Los Angeles. We started in Madison after our mothers gave us mayonnaise on our sandwiches.
Oh, in Madison.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. We're from Milwaukee originally. And And the way we would get material for Kentucky Fried Theater to make fun of was we'd leave the tape machine on, videotape machine on all night long, and tape whatever was on in the middle of the night, because that's when the silliest, stupidest, easiest to lampoon stuff was on TV. And one morning we got to work and we had taped a 1957 melodrama called Zero Hour, which was written by Arthur Haley, who did write Airport and who wrote a lot of those disaster movies. And it was the story of a guy who was a fighter pilot who had PTSD, and his girlfriend was leaving him, and she was a stewardess, and he chased her onto the plane, and there was food poisoning on the plane, and he was forced to land the plane. But it was done just completely straight. And it was, like you say, kind of a very typical of disaster movies of the 70s. And so there was actually a line in Zero Hour that says, we have to find someone who not only can fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
That was an actual line from the real movie.
From the real movie.
I want to give a shout out to True Car for this half the show, and also Marsh Clark Investigates and Castle Edge as well. So, yeah, I'll go, Brian.
You know what disaster movie I saw, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago and fell very much in love with was The Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah.
Great movie. And I was watching it, and I did not realize that Leslie Nielsen was not only in that film, but playing a totally straight role. He was the ship captain. And it was almost like, as I had grown up, you know, The Naked Gun is one of the most influential movies in my life. And seeing him not delivering jokes or not being, you know, the punchline.
Yeah,
I was like waiting for it. I kept subconsciously waiting for him to like wink at the camera.
Right.
And of course, it never happened. But it's funny how that twisted my point of view on, you know, Leslie Nielsen.
Absolutely. You can intercut scenes from The Poseidon Adventure and from Airplane, mm-hmm. and he acts exactly the same.
Right, 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 right.
You know, he doesn't move a muscle.
I loved lots of the physical gags that were sort of beyond physical gags. Like, I always loved when they'd be at the precinct and they'd go into the lab and two guys would go through the door, but one guy would go round where the pallet was. Yeah, where they had a flat up, because that's how you film,
right.
You know, but I loved that they would just literally just walk past that wall. Things like that. I was always one. They had the 1 7-foot tall, you know, cop on there, and they, like, at some point he went like, Al, you got a piece of banana on your face, and he went, no, he couldn't
side.
Show you. The other side, like half a banana
full
just
banana.
Landed on the ground.
Frame because he was so big.
Yeah.
I
loved, so much. So much good.
You must get so much of this kind of stuff about The Naked Gun and Airplane and all the movies that people love. I love Top Secret.
Oh, my God.
For some reason,
yes.
It just didn't catch on like the other movies.
Right.
But I love it. I quote it all the time. I friends of mine have, you know, the shorthand where we're constantly, you know, doing, I know a little German. He's right over there.
The Mayo Clinic.
So good.
Our family, friends, exact same thing. Do you think that one was too ahead of its time? People weren't ready to understand that kind of humor yet?
I think what happened with Top Secret was we figured, well, after Airplane, we can knock one of these puppies out every year or two. And then we started to look for a genre, something that we could spoof. And we couldn't find anything. So we thought, here's what we'll do. Let's mix Elvis Presley movies with World War II movies and come up with this kind of mock genre and go after that. So kind of the foundation wasn't as solid as it might be, because we thought joke for joke, it stands up on their point.
Well, there's two elements I feel like for a movie. There is the surprise part and then there's the execution part. So whether it's Borat or Jaws, the first is always the best, in that you can never have the genre. You can write as many jokes as you want, but the genre has been introduced. So Airplane, you were enjoying this crazy breaking of a mold genre and then all the great jokes in it. When you get to Top Secret, you have a bunch of great jokes, but we've already seen the genre in front of us before. And I don't think people realize how much of that factors in to whatever 2 or 3 or follow up you're doing, whether it's superheroes or whatever. We're so in, we think it's the movie, but it's really being introduced to the style of movie making. Mm-hmm. So there's almost, it's almost mathematically impossible to have that movie, no matter how many great jokes are in it, to hold up to Airplane, because we were so enamored with the genre and the verbiage.
Yeah. And I think that there is a, there was one of the unique qualities about things that happened in Airplane was it was cast with these guys who had spent decades perfecting the art of being dramatic actors. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they're up there making fun of themselves. And there's something that – one of the reasons I love parody is because ultimately if parody's working, we're kind of laughing at ourselves. Oh, gosh, I took Call Me Shirley seriously. Mm-hmm. And no, I don't – so when we laugh at that joke, a little bit we're kind of laughing at ourselves. And with Leslie Nielsen and Robert Stack and Peter Graves and Lloyd Bridges in Airplane, a little bit – everybody knew that they were dramatic actors who were laughing at themselves. So there wasn't just the comedy, but there was a kind of a sweet thing. They had a self-effacing sense of humor about their own work.
Robert Stack, always maybe a little underrated, maybe a little flying under the radar, but always great in when you pull the sunglasses off, the smaller sunglasses. I don't know why it always made me laugh when he was like still had his finger on the squawk box button, and he was like – divert them into Lake Michigan, saving us in lives.
Don't get the children that way.
Right. Everything about those movies. And
I think my favorite gag from Top Secret, possibly in your entire catalog that I've seen, is Val Kilmer plays a sort of Elvis Presley, you know, star who's touring Germany during World War II, and he gets captured and tortured by the Nazis, and he's getting literally whipped. He's arms up, getting whipped in a cell, and he's in such pain he passes out, and he has a dream that he's in college or high school or whatever, and he's like wandering the halls, and he goes, hey, so he finds a guy's like, well, when's the final exams? He goes, final exams were last week. You missed all the tests. And he's like, oh, no. Oh, no. And he goes back to modern times. He's getting whipped. And he goes, oh, thank God.
He leaves.
It's such a perfect joke.
It's great.
I love them all. I love when...
let's keep doing this.
I love when Leslie Nielsen gets off the airplane and there's that big crowd. And he walks up to the microphone.
Don't you people know a man can hurt
you've all
inside?
Come out to see a man who's dying inside. And like, they're here to see Weird Al.
Weird Al Yankovic's on the plane.
I love all of them. I love all the jokes.
No matter where I look, I see something that reminds me of that.
That's right.
Every time I drive past Santa Onofre.
Santa Onofre. So we're here to talk, though. We'll walk down memory lane. But the charity, Charlie Foundation, Ketogenic Therapies, you've come to the right place because the more we've been into this and talking about it for quite some time, but tell us about the charity and then tell us about Charlie and then tell us about the therapy and then we'll go on about that too.
So up until my mid-40s, my mission in life was to find things not to take seriously. And then we had our third child, Charlie, and just before his first birthday, he began to have seizures. And I don't know if any of you have seen his seizure, know much about him, but epilepsy is pretty awful. And especially with a little kid, seizures don't book a time and say, hey, I'll see you next Monday at 1:15. They can hit any time. They can involve the whole body. Charlie's eyes used to roll back. He'd twitch and make, you know, weird noises and stuff. There's no, you don't know how long a seizure is going to last. It devastates the kid. The drugs have hellacious side effects. It decimates the family. I mean, I can't. So suddenly there was something that was, there were no jokes. And it was a time in my career when things were going pretty well. And so, and you probably have this experience sometimes too, but when you have a little celebrity going for you, you get to jump to the head of the line. So we took Charlie to see the head of pediatric neurology at UCLA, LA Children's Hospital, Boston Children's Hospital, Seattle Children's, all over the place. And he had seizures in all their arms. And they were unanimous in their treatment options for Charlie. There were drugs, there was surgery, and you're out of luck.
What is the surgery entail?
Well, Charlie eventually did have a surgery. His was there was a cyst in a part of the brain actually where seizures don't even emanate. But it was the longest shot that this would help him. But there are all sorts of surgeries. If they can find a focus in the brain, one spot in the brain where the seizures are emanating from, then if they can remove that focus, it can be a cure for epilepsy. And that's a legitimate treatment option. But they couldn't find a focus for Charlie. And so he took all of the drugs of the day, and he did have a surgery that failed with hellacious side effects. And then we were pretty much told we were out of luck.
What were the side effects, if you don't mind asking?
Of the drugs?
Yeah, no, the surgery. You said hellacious side effects.
Oh, yeah. So what happened with the – we were told it was a 45-minute procedure. Mm-hmm. And so Nancy and I went in the waiting room, and 3 hours later, someone came up and said, he's having a bad reaction to the morphine.
Mm. How old is he, how old is he at this point?
18 months.
Okay.
Oh, God.
He was just a baby.
Yeah.
And and we said, morphine? Nobody said anything about morphine. Evidently, he had been in pain. They gave him morphine. So when we finally got to go up and see him, he was kind of red and puffy with like this rash, and he had a seizure.
Oh, oh boy.
So that was our lowest mark. And so in his – his prognosis from then on, he had failed 7 or 8 drugs, however many drugs were available back in those days. And his prognosis was continued seizures and what they call progressive retardation. And so kind of as an act of desperation, not because I was looking for anything that could help Charlie really, because he all these world-renowned guys had seen him and they told us they were – these were our only options. So I went to his main pediatric neurologist was at UCLA. I went to the UCLA medical library one day. This was before internet. And I went to the medical library, not really to try to find a cure for Charlie, but to try to figure out – I still get emotional – to try to figure out how he and – the rest of us were going to make it through life. What happens to these kids? Where do they go? Who takes care of them? Can they stay at home? Do they have to go to homes? Do they live?
You're looking for a blueprint, just some
yeah,
sort of
just some specs. How to get. So I get into the library and I start looking in all these medical texts, and there, I found the particular kind of epilepsy that Charlie had was called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. So I look in the back of the medical text for L, for Lennox-Gastaut. And right before that, I'd see K, ketogenic diet. And so eventually I turned to ketogenic diet in these medical texts, and they were amazingly consistent in what they had to say. The ketogenic diet was invented in 1921 at the Mayo Clinic for kids with bad seizures. For decades, it was the first option for many kids with bad seizures. Over the decades, different hospitals, different doctors, different decades, they had incredibly similar results. A third of the kids they put on a ketogenic diet had their seizures go away. Another third were significantly improved, less seizures. And for a third, it didn't work.
Why did it fall out of favor over the decades? I mean, I can sort of figure,
because
figure
you can't,
it out.
You can't put it in a pill form and sell it?
But if it works, I figure there must be doctors who at least are aware of it.
Well, that's a whole – here's the conclusion I've come to 25 years later after obsessing about this. Mm-hmm. If you ask – try this, taste test. Ask your doctor. Ask any doctor. Stop a doctor on the street. Say, how much time did you spend in medical school learning about diet therapy and nutrition? Maybe a week. Sure. Maybe 5 minutes.
I'm not a nutritionist. I'm a doctor. It's probably something you would hear.
Right.
That's not what they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, but I don't know exactly. The other thing is if you so doctors don't know, there is a pharmaceutical industry that's cashing in big time on epilepsy and invasive procedures, other kind of surgeries. There is the American Heart Association and cardiologists who will tell you high fat is bad for your diet. That's all based on bad science. There's an insurance industry that won't reimburse nutritionists who help families with a ketogenic diet. There was even the epilepsy community, which refused to admit how successful a therapy the ketogenic diet is and was.
Why were they being lobbied or part of a group?
I think so. I think everybody. I mean, this is pretty dark.
Well, there's two sides. Like, I believe to sort of the man, the government, big anything, and everyone. Like, you know, it's funny. Everyone talks about like big pharma and big. Everyone hates big whatever. The biggest is the government. Mm-hmm. The government is big too. Yes, they're super big. They're bigger than big pharma. They're the biggest. And you know, you just take something like water. When I used to play Pop Warner football in the San Fernando Valley when I was a young guy, I'd be like, don't drink water. It's bad. You'll cramp up. Rinse it out. Spit it. No. Yep. You'd run us ragged in full pads in the heat of September. And I thought water is bad for you. Then that gave way to you have to drink your weight in ounces of water every day. That then turned into carry water with you everywhere you go. And then that turned into drink when you're thirsty. Okay, I don't know why it took so long to figure out something like water. You probably familiar with the pyramid, the food pyramid with all the grains up top and the pastas and all this stuff, all nonsense. We had the pyramid all screwed up and upside down. Like, I grew up in, you know, with people go, look, you want to be healthy? You have spaghetti on toast.
Yeah, whole grains.
For dinner, a lot of whole grains. Now, look. If you want to eat a little steak once in a while, well, like on occasion. Fine. But every once in a while. And don't put butter on that bread. No. Put margarine on that bread. And don't use... everything was wrong. Everything was backwards. And this isn't in a time... And there's always a... history of, well, cigarettes aren't bad for you. They give you a pep. You know?
They're toasted.
Doctor chooses.
Yeah, right. Ask this baseball player from the 40s. But this is in modern times. We're living in the 80s and the 90s, and they're explaining, you know, well, you can eat a piece of beef, cut all the fat off, and just do it once a week. You don't want that red meat in you. You'd want to. They're wrong about everything.
Right.
I don't know if it's nefarious. I don't know if it's hubris. I don't know if they're just stupid. Like, I can't. I don't. This is why I don't trust them when they explain to me, here's the next thing that's coming, because they've been is wrong.
Well, that's good that you don't trust them.
I don't. And,
that's fine. Can I just tell you what the end of...
So you found it in the book.
So we found... And I actually found a study, because I'd love to get back and talk more about what you're talking about. I found a study that had been published. This was 1993. I found a study that had been written by some doctors at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore about the ketogenic diet. And they had tried the diet on 58 consecutive kids who had serious, epilepsy as bad as Charlie's. And of the 58 consecutive kids, 29% became seizure-free on the ketogenic diet. Now, you understand, we just traveled the United States. Mm. We'd gone to every expert we could get our hands on, and nobody mentioned a syllable about diet. So I called the doctor from Johns Hopkins who wrote the study, and he said, send his medical records. We did. And he said, why don't you come out here and we'll start the ketogenic diet with Charlie. And at the time, Charlie was on 4 medications and was having about a dozen seizures a day.
A day.
It was a nightmare.
And he's still very young at this point.
Now he's 20, a little over 20 months.
Okay.
20 months.
He's a baby.
Yeah. He's a baby.
Yeah, he's a baby.
All right.
And so we flew out to Baltimore, and we were very lucky in that there was still a dietitian at Johns Hopkins who had worked with the diet during its heyday in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and stuff, until drugs started to come along. And she put Charlie on the ketogenic diet, and in 2 days, his seizures were gone.
Wow.
What
was the most dramatic, like, diet? Because at that point, he's barely eating solid foods. So what was the most dramatic shift she made in his diet?
I got a little piece of business here. Yeah, because I always want to know, you hear the diet, but I physically want to know what was consumed. And what was being consumed before that, before you had this information. First, I'll tell you about True Car. Here's a tip. You probably know if you listen to me. Let's keep those tires properly inflated. Let's keep all the junk out of the trunk, because that weight adds up, man. Bad mileage for you. Keep your car clean as well. Get a little better gas mileage. And put that key fob underneath your chin and increase the range. Here's another tip you might not know. True Car also helps people Get used cars with a certified dealer network nationwide, inventory of nearly 1 million used and new cars. Enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you use it to buy new or used. Find out what other people paid for the exact same car, apples to apples, and go out and get your new car. Max Pata got his Prius there. Yep. What did you get from True Car, Kalen?
I got a Honda Civic Hatchback Sport.
All right.
Nice. Is it out in the parking lot?
It is.
I'm kicking some tires, man. Enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with a True Car certified dealer. When you're ready to buy new or you're ready to buy used, you check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. So back to Charlie. Now he's a young boy. He's 20 months old. You find, God bless you. You let me say this.
He was going to say what the dramatic.
I don't care. I'm angry now. I've had these conversations with my wife before, and I will spread it out to everyone. All right. You know, she just left a lengthy note on the fridge telling everyone to clean their shit up. And
more of a lament.
She'll do a thing. Yes, one of her laments.
More of a note that said, sorry if you had stuff in here.
She'll do this thing to me every once in a while where she goes, how come those guys didn't bring the Mangria head to the theater and sold? And I said, because they don't care. And then she'd go, what? And I'd go, it's not that they're bad people, but we care. I don't pay them enough to care. I pay them to do a job, but not to care. You care. I care. No one will ever do a better job than someone who cares. You take all the experts at all the clinical facilities all around, the best money can buy, but who cares more than the dad and the parents of this kid having the seizure? So you say, well, with all their training and all their expertise, but I'll say what I say to Lynette, you care. I care. That's the difference. That's how you get this stuff, like ultimately how you get it done. Now, once in a while, the greatest person, doctor, employee, or whatever, and the person you'll ever work with or find is the person who cares the exact same amount, whether it's their kid, your kid, a stranger's kid, internet, doesn't matter. They just care. But Jim cares. Like, that's why Jim got this. And that's why you go to all the experts. They all come up snake eyes. Jim goes and finds a thing because you care.
Yeah. And I think, you know, on much part, lots of social and medical movements have been made by people who care, not necessarily the experts.
Yeah. Yes. I've seen every 9 years a movie comes out like Yulee's Gold or Charlie's Oil or something like that. How else would you explain lay people? I mean, a guy who writes farcical comedies, for Christ's sake, doing better than the guy at the Mayo Clinic with the clipboard. That's how much caring can accomplish.
Yeah. Right. And then, the next step was once the diet kicked in and he was stopped having seizures and he started to grow again and hit milestones again and all that kind of stuff, then you kind of take a deep breath and you look around and there's a world epilepsy population of 65 million people. Most of those people start having seizures as children, and a tiny, tiny percentage of 1% ever hear about the ketogenic diet or hear accurate information about the ketogenic diet. And it kind of is as devastating as watching what Charlie went through when he was sick, was realizing it had all been unnecessary.
So what did you start with? Diet-wise, and what were you doing diet-wise?
You know, if you guys are really on a ketogenic diet, it's not that different from what you're eating. You know, the ketogenic Hippocrates talked about the benefits of fasting on the brain thousands of years ago. And so what do you do when you fast? You burn your own body fat. You can't do that indefinitely. So as I mentioned, in 1921, at the Mayo Clinic, doctors invented a diet that mimics the effects of fasting. In other words, a high-fat diet with limited protein, enough protein to grow on, vegetable, no sugar, no refined carbohydrates. So my guess is that's the ketogenic diet. And that's the ketogenic diet. If you're going to – it tends to be more rigid. There's no room for cheating if you're using it for a real medical condition as opposed to a weight loss diet or just feeling good. You know,
what should people, I'm trying to give a little call to action, go to charliefoundation.org, and it's FNDATION.
At Charlie Foundation on Twitter with no O and no U in Foundation.
On Twitter, sorry, yes. And so this is, so now it's insane because we've gone through this where we understood it. And also, when something works, it just works. Like when someone gets on this diet, it works. And then also, all the nonsense, you know it. Like when they go, like when then a few short years ago, they were peddling the eat, you know, multiple small meals a day. You eat 6, 8, 10 small meals a day. We need little throughout the day, just small meals. And you're like, how could we be wired for that? There's no, that would be torture for us to be wired to eat all day when
survival.
You kill a buffalo or something and you'd gorge on it and then you couldn't eat for 3 days or whatever it was. It's just grazing all day. That couldn't be possible in our DNA.
And you don't need a doctor to tell you if you feel good.
Yeah. It's insane. All the stuff that gets pushed at us. I mean, just the consume copious amounts of water and eat all the time, all day, small meals. That's 4 years old. Yeah. That's not like, well, back in the 60s, everyone was high.
It's the internet age.
This is new. It's insane how much bad info just gets shoved out there. So Charlie, how is he doing?
He's doing great. He was on the diet for 5 years and since then has eaten whatever he wants. And so he was cured. So today he's a preschool teacher in West LA, and he's happy and doesn't really remember the diet that much and certainly doesn't remember having seizures.
What a cutie.
We're looking at a picture of him.
I don't know how long he's been teaching, but has he ever noticed or had a child in his class with seizures? And
I don't think so. That picture there, he teaches at the Salvation Army in West Los Angeles. And I don't think they have kids who are sick in their classroom.
Nobody loves their kids like you and Zucker. Because David Zucker brought Charlie, his kid, over last weekend, I think. A week, you know, 10 days ago or something like that. Yes, kid loves cars.
Oh.
So brought his kid over to look at the cars.
Oh.
And
I heard about it.
Obviously, looking at cars cooler than just eating jerky all day and not having seizures. But either way, who knew you two would be the world's greatest dads? Like most of the comedic dads are like, he started banging his secretary and then he moved to Florida. I hate him. You know, like there's a lot of that. Yeah. You guys did a good job in the family raising department. Yeah, what drives me, all right, now I'm angry.
Good.
Okay. When somebody gets into a car crash and they're driving an old pickup truck and it didn't have airbags or crumple zones or, you know, didn't have a headrest built in and somebody said, well, they could have survived if they were in a brand new Mercedes, I don't think, what a waste, because I realized the brand new Mercedes is $94,000 and all this guy could afford was $2,200 for a car. And thus, his life's going to be a little bit more dangerous. And I'm sad he's dead. But so many things in life it's just about information. Everybody would enjoy bread with actual butter on it rather than parquet.
Yes.
If you gave them a choice, people would enjoy a steak with some fat on the side of it rather than some dry spaghetti or whatever it is. And we can do it and we should do it. And and many times, you know, giving your kid a couple pieces of salami and a couple pieces of cheese versus, you know, porridge in the morning, easier, faster, whatever. It's all doable, but we don't have the information. So it's like saying the guy who was driving the $2,200 pickup could have been in the Mercedes and could still be alive today, but he didn't have the information. Someone told him the truck was safer. That's what drives me nuts.
Good. Because, and that's, to be honest, that's been our mission with the Charlie Foundation from the get-go is to give people information so they can make an informed decision with their doctor about their medical destinies. And I believe that the sooner all of us get through that learning curve, that we need to educate ourselves, the medical destinies, our medical destinies, and the medical destinies of our kids is largely up to us. The sooner we can make it through that learning curve, the better off we all are.
Well, maybe the tide is turning.
I think it is.
And I'll tell you why, because not so much as it pertains to epilepsy, but in general, a lot of pills prescribed to kids for, hyper, ADD. He's got ADD and he's got hyperactive syndrome or whatever it is. And nothing ever really works. And now, and of course, with the opioid crisis, no opioids work for back pain, not real back pain. They work for having a wisdom tooth pulled and you got to make it through the weekend because you can't sleep at night. They work for 3 days. They don't, the long term opioid, people are dying left and right. It's all, we're starting to finally wrap our heads around giving the kids the pills, giving the guy who had the back surgery the pills. It's starting to turn to, great grandma was always right. Just, stretching, a good diet, whatever she was making bacon and eggs for breakfast every day, not prefabbed oats and all sorts of stuff. Like all the stuff we knew and did, that's what it is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And there was a study that I read just a couple days ago about the whole opioid thing and back pain. And they tested a whole bunch of veterans who were having back pain. And it was the opioids or Tylenol. And actually, the people who took the Tylenol came out better.
Wow. The opioid is just, it stops the pain and then your body craves the opioid. So your body creates the pain. Who can tell? Of course, your brain can create pain down your spinal column. They speak to each other all the time. Yes.
Do you know why I'm here today, how I got here today?
Uber.
Yeah.
No.
Town car.
No. The reason I'm here today is because I have a buddy. His name is Tom Minahan. Wonderful guy. He's a doctor. And his daughter has epilepsy, and she's had very good results with the ketogenic diet. And he went through the same rigmarole that my family went through, drug after drug after drug, until he finally started to figure it out. And Mallory's doing really well today. And he always says to me, hey, Jim, how come you never play the airplane card? You've been doing this for 25 years now. Why don't you ever say, hey, I made airplane, and I happen to know about this very effective therapy for epilepsy. It's part of Tom's job as he's an emergency room doctor. It's part of his job. He travels around the United States and lectures other emergency room doctors about emergency room stuff. And now, because his daughter had her experience with the ketogenic diet, he adds to his lecture. And he'll talk to like 100 doctors at a time. He'll add two questions to his lecture. One, how many of you doctors have ever heard of a ketogenic diet? And his guesstimate, and I've been there for one of his lectures, his guesstimate is about 3 to 5% have heard of a ketogenic diet. Then his follow-up question is, how many of the 3 to 5% of you who've heard of a ketogenic diet know it can be a cure for epilepsy? No one.
Yeah, no one. And it's just information.
And it's information. And it gets back to a point I was trying to make earlier, this stuff isn't taught to doctors.
No.
So how can they be advocates for a diet therapy if they're clueless?
Agreed. We need to take ourselves a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do the news. And Jim will hang out and join in right after this.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, Gizmodo reports that Facebook will begin letting users know immediately whether their data was shared with Cambridge Analytica. Users of the social media giant will see a, quote, protecting your information link. That'll be at the top of your news feed with information on how to prevent your data from being shared. Users who have already had their data breached will see an additional message which reads, we have banned the website called This Is Your Digital Life, which one of your friends used to log on to Facebook. We did this because the website may have misused some of your Facebook information by sharing it with a company called Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica, a political data mining firm, is accused of collecting data on 87 million users to influence voter opinion on behalf of political groups who hire them. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg will be before Congress talking about this on Wednesday.
You know, it's interesting. I was sitting around last night having a steak with no potatoes with the great Nick Santora and Kevin Hinch.
Silent Uber ride?
The Uber steak.
Yeah, I told Hinch just to drive. I said, look, just keep it to two Moscow mules. We'll it's be fine. So we're sitting around talking, and I said, yeah, no, I just got back from Toronto, and we just had a listener come, Craig, just picked up me and Mike and took us around or whatever. And people pick me up all the time. Like, they go, hey, you're coming into Madison or whatever, we'll pick you up. And I go, yeah, fine. And then Craig comes and picks us up. People pick us up. I'm going to do a race at Road Atlanta. There's a dude who just lives by the track. He's like, you want to crash at my house? I'll pick you up at the airport. I said, yeah, we'll crash at your house. So both Kevin and Nick went, what the fuck? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you just get into a car with a strange fan who lives in Canada who says he's going to pick you up? And I go, yeah, why wouldn't we? And he's like, I don't know. I don't trust people enough or something. And we're like, I said, when we did Loveline, people would send over sacks of cookies in pouches of foil that they made themselves. And Drew and I would just break it open in front of us and just start reaching into it. I mean, there could have been rat poison and laxative and whatever else in there. We would always eat literally just loose homemade cookies in a foil sack sent to us from Minneapolis. We'd eat them every time.
Rat poison and laxative. Rat poison was for a reason. The laxative was for laughs.
Yeah.
That was just for fun.
It also can defeat the rat poison sometimes, so you don't want to do both.
It gets through you quicker.
I said, I don't know. That's the way I go through my life. Like, I've never had any trouble. And also, Mike August, I've seen him physically fight people on freeway off ramps. So that's fine. You want to roll with him. And I've gotten in a few. We're fine. We don't care. And I feel the same way with my information. Like I don't care. I don't care if my information's out there. I don't want to get my checking account hacked Russian, whatever. But whatever you're giving me, trying to get me to vote for whoever whatever. Here's what I assume. I assume that my information is out there already, and it's just there.
Yes.
And I'm assume that people want to get it and try to make some money off it.
I agree.
I also assume that's the new world order.
Yes.
It's a small price to pay for me to hop on the internet and look up everything I want to all the time, all day, every day. I mean, I'll be like, Paul Newman's Trans Am Corvette sold at Amelia Island in 2008 at the Mecum auction. How much did that go for? And then, it's $281.46. Like, okay, that's something.
Yeah.
That's not even. That's something to me.
You're getting something.
And in return, someone's going to try to get me to vote for somebody else. I'll give it to him.
Yeah.
I keep thinking that you can have my information. It'll put you right to sleep.
Well, if you want to have your information, this particular set of information they have on Facebook, you can go in the settings section and just hit undo on everything. It'll tell you exactly who it thinks you are and what it thinks you're about. Mm. Apparently, I was an Asian woman with an affinity for Latinos.
Mm.
So it does its best guessing. I do have a lot of Asian friends, but it does its best guessing and compiles all this information on you, and you can have it. You can take it off.
As distasteful as the whole Cambridge Analytica thing is, I agree with you.
Cambridge Analytica.
The whole story about Facebook and the data being blah, blah, blah. The only thing alarming is how many people are truly surprised.
Right.
Like, oh, my God, you're kidding me. Facebook, yeah. Why do you think Facebook's in our lives? Why do you think Facebook is free? That's why we do it. Like people, the same people who are like, you're telling me Alexa, or Google, whatever, Alexa listens in on what I'm. Yeah, that's why I don't have one, because they're listening all the time,
like the Xbox, everything else.
Yeah. Who's shocked by this?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Well, I assume narcissists, because they're the ones that are always worried about their information. My information is free. Anyone can have it.
Remember, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe a month ago, we talked about how Russell Crowe was going to have this big divorce auction to settle up with his ex-wife. It happened.
Yeah.
Mm.
So
that's where we were this weekend.
This was a big financial boon for Russell Crowe. All said, he made $3.7 million. The Oscar winner raked in the cash Saturday night at the Sotheby's auction designed to fund his split from ex-wife Danielle Spencer.
Was there memorabilia, I assume?
Yeah, the Art of Divorce is what it was called. It took place in Sydney his 54th birthday. Offered more than 200 of the star's belongings, lots of movie memorabilia, artworks, instruments. Among the best sellers was a breastplate he wore in Gladiator, sold for $125,000. Now, Russell and Danielle have been separated since 2012, but the divorce is only now being finalized. I think everyone just kind of wanted this over with.
Again, this didn't really exist, and now it does, all this memorabilia business, and I love it. There's Steve McQueen from the movie Le Mans Fire Suit coming up in a month. There's Ayrton Senna Fire Suit. That'll be an interesting thing. Anyone saw the Doc Senna? It's all this weird memorabilia. I pay attention to the car side of it.
I was going to say, are you going in on that, or you just want to see what it sells for?
I have Newman fire suits and helmets, so I'm sort of interested to see what it does, because it'll
affect the price.
Yeah, in the collector world, there's watches, there's cars, there's guns, and there's guitars, and now there's movie stuff, but it's also a tricky world. It is. So here's the thing that's interesting in that world. If you have Steve McQueen's Porsche that he's going to sell, and it's a 69 911, and its street value is $100,000, it may go for $1.3 million, because Steve McQueen's a car guy.
The story.
Then you have Sir Paul McCartney's Lamborghini. Doesn't add anything to it. He's Paul McCartney, but he's not a car guy.
Right.
And they'll do it with Rod Stewart's mirror and stuff like that. So it's a weird world where you go, well, that's Rod Stewart's mirror. That's Paul McCartney. And it's like, yeah, but he's not in a car.
And nobody cares.
We got Steve McQueen's in the car. So those.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it has to be. Then there's this other weird algorithm where the other direction, which
Weird
is
Al.
Weird Al. Charithm. There's got to be an Al in there.
Come on.
Where it's like, hey, I got Walter Payton's fire suit. He raced for 1 year with Newman Sharpe. And then they go, yeah, it's not really worth anything. And I go, but it's only racing suit Walter Payton. Yeah, but he's a football guy. So it's he's not known in this world.
Right.
Like Paul McCartney guitar.
Now we're talking.
But now eventually, look, it's better that Paul McCartney owned it than not, but it
and
doesn't.
No Bears fans out there.
It doesn't have the 10 times value that Steve McQueen does when he does it. Although, if Steve McQueen sold a guitar.
Yeah.
How do they certify Paul McCartney owned it?
Pubes.
Not his.
It's just a bunch of, most cars are like a lot of registration and pictures and old serial numbers. Yeah. Cars always have stamped serial numbers on firewalls and engine blocks and stuff. And there's guys that are pretty good at authenticating.
As long as Jim Abrams is in studio, you must have some memorabilia from your movies. Is there anything that sort of sticks out as one of your favorites, something you kept for over the years?
Well, there was a signed O.J. Simpson football.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Right. Norberg. Yeah. And a story I was looking here of getting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar up in there. Was it originally going to be Pete Rose?
Yeah, it was originally. I mentioned earlier the whole Zero Hour backstory. Well, the pilot in Zero Hour was a guy named Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch.
Rams wide receiver.
Nice. Very nice.
Doug Deep.
And he... And he also wound up being an athletic director at the University of Wisconsin. Anyway, he was evidently, when they made Zero Hour in 1957, he was done being an athlete, and he was looking for something else to do. So he decided to dip his toe in the acting water, and so he's the pilot in Zero Hour. And God bless him. I mean, he did his best, but he couldn't act to save his soul. And so it occurred to David.
Wait a minute, a guy was known for foot speed on the gridiron,
couldn't emote,
didn't translate.
Strange, as it may say. So we decided, wouldn't it be fun to cast an actual athlete in the part of a pilot? And in the middle of the movie, just call him out, say no. And originally, we wrote the part for Pete Rose. And Pete Rose was going to be the co-pilot, but we filmed Airplane in the summer, so he was unavailable. So we said, you know,
who's off season?
Right, who's off season? And Kareem was, and we sent him the script, and he agreed to do it. But that's how that all evolved.
That's another great scene about the kid saying, "My dad says you're lazy. Don't get back on defense."
That's the best gag in one of the best gags in the movies. Only the kid knows. Yeah. Only the little kid knows. The 7'5" giant is a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
See if your dad can drag his ass up and down the court for 45 minutes.
Wow. Drag Lanier, I think, up and down the court.
Yeah, right, by the time.
Wow. Pull him down. Or Walton or Lanier.
We're fans.
That's shocking.
Yeah, we love it, man. I'll tell you about Marcia Clark Investigates, the first 48, everybody. New original docuseries, new episodes, Thursdays, 9 o'clock on A&E. Marcia Clark delves into some of America's most shocking unsolved crimes or controversial verdicts. Each two-hour episode explores a different investigation, taking an in-depth look at the first 48 hours after the crime to uncover new revelations and angles. Controversial murder cases include Casey Anthony's daughter, Kaylee, Chandra Levy, Robert Blake's wife, Bonnie Lee Bakley, Run DMC's Jam Master Jay, Drew Peterson's wife, remember the cop with the wife and the drowning and the bathtub? All the good stuff done by the best. Marcia Clark. Marcia Clark Investigates, the first 48. Thursdays, 9 o'clock, only on A&E. That's Marcia Clark Investigates, the first 48. All right. What's another?
Well, former UFC fighter Ronda Rousey made her pro wrestling debut over the weekend at WrestleMania 34, according to E! News. Now, though the outcome is predetermined, Ronda stuck to the script. She won her tag team mixed match challenge. We're watching some footage of it right here, slamming down Stephanie McMahon, I believe. Mm-hmm. She's made a dramatic shift from her bloody fighting days in the UFC octagon. Ronda admitted she's unlikely to return to MMA. She said, quote, "This is full-time. They've got me for a multi-year deal. This is my home."
She's wearing a Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah, Roddy Piper shirt.
Sports bra.
Yeah,
that was her thing, Rowdy Ronda.
Was it? I didn't know that.
She was also Rowdy.
Her nickname was Rowdy.
Rowdy Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, story is she was Rowdy Ronda Rousey, I guess, and she asked Roddy McDowell. Different, total off subject.
Weird.
Getting back to Poseidon. Yeah. I think he wasn't.
It was Ronda McDowell.
All right.
Wow.
Oh, deep cut. So she asked him, "Can I use your nickname?" And he said, you know, gladly.
And him being the nicest man on the planet said, sure.
Oh, I used to hang out with him. I mean.
Ronda McDowell?
He actually, there's footage somewhere, Max Zapata, of him just out on Jimmy's porch. Like, we're just standing, we're watching football at Jimmy's house. And there was Rowdy. And he just got, everybody had a stupid friend named like David Silverstein or something. And I said, just choke him out and put him in a sleep row. And he just choked him out. And it was me and Cousin Sal, like John Popper from Blues Traveler. And everyone's just standing around laughing. The sleeper hold, you don't choke. You go out.
Yeah.
I think there's like, you know, if you think about it, choking takes a minute.
Yeah.
This takes 4 seconds.
Yeah, this is like pressing a nerve. He used to come in on the morning show or on Conway and everyone, and people would volunteer to be put to sleep. It was his thing.
To me, the being put to sleep part.
At like 10 p.m.?
Yeah, come over to the house.
Great.
Yeah, I didn't know where that is. It's a deep cut. It'd be like a Cousin Sal thing or something, but I remember everyone was standing around laughing. So, good for Rhonda, and I'm glad she's paying homage to Rowdy. 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 Rowdy.
Andy McDowell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Toronto Star reports that, now this is, brace yourself, this is very sad and very shocking. Someone walked off with a valuable rock from an interactive Yoko Ono art exhibit last month.
It's August.
And the police are still trying to find the thief. Mm-hmm. The heist took place at the Gardner Museum in Toronto, Canada, which actually encouraged its patrons to handle the rocks. Ono had placed them there to encourage meditation. Mm. The idea, though, was that you return the rock when you were done, and this particular rock apparently valued at $17,500. The woman who walked off with it described as a 50 to 60 year old woman, about 5'4".
Not the spitting image of everything we think of, a cat burglar.
And the rock, that it said on the rock, love yourself. And that's $17,000 rock.
She loves free gravel.
Yeah.
You know, my feeling, my art, you know, my performance art would be if everyone just collected rocks from around the world, and then the next time Yoko Ono did a concert, they all just threw it at her. That would be awesome.
She'd make the same sound as what
it'd be an awesome statement to go
you
out
know
on.
She was suffering from rocks being thrown at her or singing.
Right. You're actually there'd be no discernible sound difference at all between her being stoned to death or her just having a concert.
Yeah. She could be the rock star.
She'd fart for the first time ever.
Reason you're Jimmy.
Yes. Goodbye. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. All right. We'll do one more in a second. I'll tell you, we're going to be in Santa Ana Esports Arena with Heather Dubrow, Real Housewife. That'll be April 21st, doing a live podcast, so come on out. That I'll be in Cleveland at the Agora Theater, and that'll be May 17th. I'm laughing in advance. That's a one-man show. And then Detroit. Take him to Detroit. No. That's the greatest. Royal Oak Theater. That's outside of Detroit. That'll be May 18th. I forgot about the whole kung fu ass. Part of the whole running kung fu.
Fistful of yen.
Take him to Detroit. That was awesome. One of the craziest moments of my life is the guy who was the main guy, who was sort of the Bruce Lee guy, in that move in Fistful of Yen, that guy was the umpire in a high school baseball game I was playing in, and I was literally like freaking out, like I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm umpiring the game." Like, I can't have you standing behind me calling balls and strikes. I'm so used to seeing him.
Evan Kim.
Wow.
God, yeah, interesting dude. Anyway, take him to Detroit. Portland, Aladdin Theater, first show sold out. We're doing a second show. They'll be doing a live taping there for a TV special. And Seattle Moore Theater, that'll be us doing a live podcast. That'll be in September. And then we're going on the cruise. Sorry. One more.
Well, would you rather spend time with your best friend or your significant other? Because according to recent British surveys...
What if they're one and the same, Gina?
Oh, then Adam's not going on a road trip with them if they're the same.
Oh, will my best friend blow me? Because there's a lot of factors
that
I got to do here.
Well, according to this survey, when asked if women would rather spend time with their husbands or their best friend, exactly 50% of them went with their friend. Now, here's some of the top reasons they gave. She listens more. I can tell her things I couldn't tell my husband. We laugh until we cry. Mm-hmm. I can truly be myself. She offers better advice. She's far less irritating. And we have much more in common.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone sort of... all right, let's see if we can work this out. There's a thing you have with your significant other that's a powerful thing, just like many of you have that with your parents. I don't have that with my parents, but most people have like a powerful thing. But they don't want to sit around and shoot the shit with their parents, but there's a thing.
Right,
so
bond.
When the shit goes down, you got to tell them about this and all that stuff, and there's something that transcends something. But if you're just going to enjoy a beer and a taco, that's not the time
that's
to talk
mom.
To that. No.
Yeah.
But when something happens, that's when it is. So I think in a way you can take that same equation and graft it off to the wives and the husbands and whatever, that the kind of conversations you have about the subjects you have transcend jokes and how's it going or whatever it is. But if you're looking for just the lighthearted
fun.
Yeah, fun. Let's talk a little shit about somebody we both know. Well, and sometimes business.
Yeah.
And then you go with the friend.
And that's something I've never understood because I've heard both male and female friends say, once I got in a relationship with this person or once I married this person, I didn't have any friends left. Like, they wouldn't let me have friends, which to me is insane. I beg of you, if I'm with you, please, please find somebody other than me to share your time with sometimes. I don't understand that thinking that you want them there all the time, that you don't want them to have a healthy social circle.
Yeah, tangentially related to that, like, it's not romantic to talk about it, but time apart is very valuable
it's
in
important.
A relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let me miss you a little bit.
That's why Christy leaves all the
That's
time.
That's exactly why. She doesn't work.
No,
she
true.
Just goes over to
She just
London.
Goes to Germany for other reasons.
It's true. Agreed. All right, let's bring it
you
home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Yeah, Castrol Edge. How about Castrol Edge? Oh, man. Love this stuff. Full synthetic. You need it. Cars are working harder these days. You need some Castrol Edge. They collaborated, I should say, with Electronic Arts to present an adrenaline-filled driving challenge called Titanium Gamer. Inspired by the Need for Speed video games, you can find out if real or computer-based driving skills are superior. So let's check into that. See for yourself. Go to Castrol Edge and check out their page. Go to Castrol USA YouTube page and check out a very riveting video. All right. The Podcast Masterclass. You can find that with all the information at CorollaClass.com. And still a couple tickets left for the cruise. So come on out. Say hi for us, Jim Abrams, everyone. Charlie Foundation for Ketogenic Therapies. You can visit charliefoundation.org. That's all just spelled how it is. The Twitter is at Charlie Foundation. And there's no O in U and found. It's just FNDATION. Yes.
Can I mention something about the Charlie Foundation?
Sure.
I was looking at your website because I wanted to learn more.
Right.
And it's not just for epilepsy, obviously. You know that. But for all sorts of neurological disorders, brain tumors, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism. So it benefits a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, and it didn't get mentioned. I want to make sure people knew
about
that.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. That's been, you know, when we first got involved, it was pretty much just an epilepsy thing. But as it's gained awareness in the epilepsy community, they're using the same diet on a bunch of different neurological disorders and found that it has very positive effects too.
Good for you.
So, until next time, Sam Carolla for Jim Abrams, Gina Grad, and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
She's far less irritating.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Give him thumbs up on Facebook. And leave us a voicemail with your questions and comments at 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take a Knee for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the link at adamcarolla.com. May 17th in Cleveland, May 18th in Detroit. That's for the Ace Man Solo. ACS Podcast happening at Esports Arena in Santa Ana on April 21st. For tickets on all of it, go to adamcarolla.com.